Then when you're ready to start and begin to follow the technique of placing your light, gentle attention on the breath, and also noticing when thoughts distract you and labeling them very gently, saying thinking, and then quite simply, no big deal, no sense of struggle, just coming back to the breath. Doing this over and over. So when you're ready to start following the technique, begin knowing that you're beginning, and with some intention. Maybe the intention is just to be faithful to the technique, and at the same time as relaxed and friendly as possible. Maybe you want to emphasize precision, always coming back. Whenever you find that you're wandering, maybe you want to dedicate the period to friendly voice, saying thinking, not a harsh voice, but always coming back, not following the fantasy or the thought. So maybe you want to dedicate the session to precision, stabilizing the mind. Maybe you want to dedicate it to friendliness or warmth or gentleness, faithful to the technique but with friendliness, warmth. Maybe your intention is to train in letting go more. Then you might want to definitely just work with out-breath. Breath going out, dissolving into space. When thoughts arise, just touching them lightly with the label and letting them dissolve back into space. So with some intention of how you'd like to spend this particular block of sitting, training your mind, taming your mind, you begin. Faithful to the technique, but with enormous gentleness. So please keep meditating or keep sitting in your sitting posture. But what's happening with your mind? When the thoughts arise, sometimes they take you away for a very long time. Sometimes it's just a few sentences. Sometimes it doesn't take you away at all. There's little thoughts, but they don't distract you. But how are you working with the thoughts? With the fantasies? With the sentences? When you have that amazing moment of realizing, of just automatically waking up and realizing you've been thinking, what do you do next? Have you been following, just following, going back and just continuing with the fantasy or the thoughts? Or have you been interrupting the discursiveness in a gentle, light way by just touching it and coming back to the breath? The view of our practice is that we're uncovering our Buddha nature. And if we could be present enough, relaxed enough into the present moment, we would indeed discover in glimpses and then more and more stabilized that open, clear, unfixated mind. That's always here. So inspire yourself that way and realize that if we keep following after the fantasies, keep following after the thoughts, then we'll never have any insight. We're putting off uncovering the Buddha nature. So definitely we will have fantasies and we will have distracting thoughts. That will happen. But when we realize we've been thinking, that's the important moment. And that's where our training enters into the picture. So for the remaining part of this sitting period, be very attentive to noticing the thoughts and in a very non-judgmental, gentle way, interrupting that chain of discursiveness by labeling them thinking and coming back to relaxing in and out with the breath, feeling the breath, being with the breath. Relaxing in and out, coming back again and again. So this process of non-aggressively, gently interrupting the thoughts, the purpose of it isn't really to get rid of thoughts, because you can't get rid of thoughts. Occasionally you may have periods of sitting period where you don't have any thoughts. That happens. But in general, that's like the ocean, that sometimes it's completely still, but nevertheless the waves come back. The nature of the thoughts are, what they say is that it's like the waves are part of the water. There's no trying to get rid of the thoughts particularly. But the problem is, really, for us, is that we obstruct the open quality of mind, this brilliant, open, unfixated, natural state of mind that's accessible to all sentient beings. We obstruct it with fixating, grabbing on. And our standard way of doing that is the thinking process. As you know, and usually we begin to know more clearly when we start to meditate, we really believe in the thoughts. They completely run our lives. And in fact, what's said is that we are the thoughts, in the sense of ego clinging, that's completely dependent on the belief in our thoughts. So in other words, it's not dependent on thoughts. Enlightened people have thoughts, but it's dependent on this kind of belief, this investment in, this being run around by the thoughts. So, you know, typical experience, if you're meditating in your own room and you don't have the discipline of the shrine hall, you're sitting there and then you don't even realize you thought about a glass of water. The next thing you know, you're in the bathroom or down in the kitchen, you know, getting a glass of water. Or a smaller thing. In other words, you can actually move right out of the meditation posture into another place, and it was just mind, just a movement of mind that was, be nice to have some water, or I'm a little thirsty or something, and next thing you know, it's just as if it was someone grabbed you by a rope and pulled you someplace. And so the same thing is with moving in meditation, moving our body and scratching and things. It's so much of it is completely unconscious and actually unnecessary. So that's why we slow down and really be trying to become mindful. And we don't really repress moving or scratching, but we do it aware that we're doing it and that we actually need to do it, that it's not just an impulse. So even more so with these fantasies. So no amount of talking by the part of a teacher is going to stop you following after these thoughts, unless you really begin to realize that it is obstructing us. It's like fluid, dynamic, living quality of water, and then we have the illusion of freezing it into ice. And for all extensive purposes, we have frozen it, and it's basically like an object. We make things into objects and they invest them with truth, and they have so much power over us. So we train again and again, and just coming back to the object of meditation is a way of interrupting that fixated quality, the grasping and fixation. That's really what we're interrupting. And so I hope as the years go on, you become more and more motivated to really want to do this. Whenever you notice that your mind's been going, that you really feel motivated, that each time you come back, you're actually uncovering the true nature of mind. You're allowing for some open, unfixated quality to be connected with. You're allowing yourself to connect with. And you're beginning to dissolve this ancient habitual pattern of fixating, grasping with our mind. So meditation is a lot about that. And in general, it is about uncovering the true state of mind, and the method of doing that, that we're working with now is that when we realize we've been thinking, that's the same thing as saying, you know, we realize we've been sort of caught up, or we've been believing what we've been, the conversation we've been having with ourselves. We interrupt it in a very non-aggressive, gentle, friendly way, because we want to bring as much relaxation and spaciousness into this process. So it's an interesting balance between being really faithful to the technique, but with this enormous sense of relaxing and gentleness. Those two qualities are the most important thing. I was reading a talk by Khunlop Rinpoche. He said, in the process of uncovering Buddha nature, in the process of uncovering our open, unfixated quality of our mind, we have to be willing to get our hands dirty. What he was referring to here was willing to work with our disturbing emotions. So in order to experience the natural state, we have to be willing to also experience our emotions, actually experience our ego clinging. So this may feel really disturbing and negative, insane even. And a lot of people, consciously or unconsciously, would just like meditation to be a chilling out where they didn't have to relate with unpleasantness. And actually, a lot of people have the misunderstanding that that's what meditation is about. It includes everything except anything that feels bad. And anything that feels bad, you're supposed to label it thinking and shove it away, or hit it on the head with a mallet. So even the slight hint of panic that something unpleasant is about to be thought, felt, or experienced, you use the label thinking as a way to repress it and rush back to the object of meditation, hoping, you know, that it's like you never have to go to that uncomfortable place. So Khunlop Rinpoche says a great thing in this article. He says that without having a direct experience of emotions, we can never touch the heart of Buddha nature. We can never actually hear the message of awakening. So he said that if you can experience your emotions, and so this is what we're going to talk about this morning, what does this word experiencing mean? And actually, how can we experience emotions? How can we experience this negative, disturbing, unsettling stuff that, generally speaking, we avoid or indulge in, on the other hand? So he said it's only by really tasting your experience of emotions that you get a taste of enlightenment. I thought that was great. The only way you can get a taste of enlightenment is to begin to get the taste of your emotions. So, of course, Buddha nature and this natural state is not just emotions. It's everything. You know, it's the calm and the disturbed and the roiled up and the still. It's the bitter and the sweet, the comfortable and the uncomfortable. It includes opening to all of this, and it's found in the midst of all of that. But emotions, the way it's taught is because we perceive dualistically, Therefore, when strong energy arises, usually associated with different thoughts, memories, or future thoughts, this somewhat indescribable thing happens, which we call emotions, which is like a strong reaction. And that is just pure energy, but because of dualistic perception, we identify it as me, and it gets very locked in. The energy gets frozen. So this is to say the energy itself is not a problem. We always associate these emotions with thoughts, like we're scared of something, or we're angry at somebody, or we're feeling lonely or ashamed or lust or something in relationship with either ourselves or somebody else. But it seems to be associated, has a lot of mental conversation, and really, in my own experience, it feels like the thoughts come first and then there's the emotions. It's a little hard to kind of sort it out. But what's said is that actually, whether you want to blame it on hormones or you want to blame it on nothing at all except the nature of reality, all kinds of different emotional energies, all kinds of energies arise and fall in any given sitting period, in any given a half hour of our life. There's a lot of things that come and go, and we don't have to attach so much meaning to them. And we also don't have to identify with it so strongly. So we're talking about experiencing what I always call experiencing the energy. But it's experiencing the emotion, not thinking about the emotion. It's the same thing that I've been talking about with the breath. Experiencing the breath going in and out, trying to find a way to breathe in and out without thinking about the breath or conceptualizing the breath or watching the breath. So in the same way, we experience the emotions, not thinking about the emotions or conceptualizing the emotions. Just experiencing means having the felt sense. That's just my way of describing it. I think as you get the hang of this more and more, you may have a different way to describe it. This word felt sense may not really be the right word for you, but we're trying to get at that you could have an experience of the energy of emotions behind the thoughts, deeper than the thoughts, you know, underlying the thoughts. So you could have an experience of dread, for instance. Now, there would be a storyline about being afraid of something that was about to happen. But if there was a way that through your meditation training, you could even for a few moments interrupt the conversation, then you could have an actual experience of dread, a nonverbal experience of dread. And that could be, you know, just that you become physically aware of dread, felt, you know, as it's clenching and tightness and different things like that. But it can even go deeper than that, that you actually have a textural experience of dread as like tingly or hot or whatever. And my initial time of having this, what I'm talking about here is experiencing, was very, very interesting. I was in a period of a lot of distress that I couldn't get away from. And this happens in our life because frequently, like the person that was triggering me wasn't going away. It was here at the Abbey, in fact. And we had to live with each other and in pretty close quarters. So in fact, what was being triggered was old memories and conditioning. And this is often the case with strong emotions. There's a lot locked in there. You know, in other words, it's irrational. It's like a dog who hears a certain sound and freaks out. Well, we do the same thing. We see a certain facial expression, or someone treats us in a certain way, or there's just a tone of voice, or someone reminds us of something, or even out of the blue, there's this whole felt sense of, say, dread. And usually we're not even aware of it. We just react the way we always have for lifetimes, probably. So what was being triggered was a feeling of helplessness, because this woman disliked me intensely and wouldn't talk to me about it. So it was bringing up these feelings of powerlessness, of not being able to get it under control, of not being able to make it all right. I couldn't get her to like me, and I couldn't even get her to talk about it. There was no way that my usual strategies were working, so I was just naked with this reoccurring, meeting her in the halls constantly, and she'd walk by cold, and boy, it would just bring up probably a centuries of conditioning of mine. But I thought to myself, this is my big chance, you know. Maybe I can not ever have to have this one come up again, ever again in this life or any other lifetime, you know. So I tried everything and all my good advice that I give other people, and nothing was working. And then one night I just came to the meditation hall and I just sat all night long because I was in so much pain I didn't know what else to do. And basically I didn't think much at all because I was in so much pain. Sometimes pain completely knocks thoughts out. You're just sort of sitting in the pain and it's like you're speechless at all levels. And then I began to have this quality of experiencing what it was I was going through with her. And then I had a body memory of being a very little child, and it wasn't like I had a traumatic memory or anything. I just kind of realized at a cellular level, I realized that my entire ego structure, my entire personality was designed to never go to this particular place of feeling this. And that I began to call it the death thought. Because all it was a feeling of deep inadequacy, like I wasn't okay. But that is really death to ego, completely, you know. And from that felt experience, I began to realize the power, you know, that how we get sidetracked with words, with talking about it. We get completely sidetracked with our strategies, which are always to move away from the felt experience. So whether it's the humdinger, such as this one was, which is the kind of core pin of your ego structure, or whether it's just any strong emotion, you know, lighter weight ones, usually emotions that really hook us, there's a lot of our stuckness is all wrapped up in that. And there's a lot of fear wrapped up in going to that place. So this is why I got interested in experiencing, and then I began to realize that in the Vajrayana it's a hot topic, and also in the Mahayana, to actually value your emotions and be able to experience them without thinking about them or conceptualizing them, but actually a completely felt experience. It gives you a lot of insight into why you do the things you do, why other people do the things they do. Compassion comes out of this. It also begins to really open the doorway to Buddha nature and that complete open spaciousness that's available when we're not blocking it with this fixating. Because once I had that experience, it was like liberation of a certain kind. First of all, I saw through my patterns. And second of all, I realized that if I don't do that, even if I just experience, I couldn't say I'll never experience this again, but I realized by experiencing it instead of trying to run away from it, then you can discover the true nature, the unconditioned nature, the natural state, Buddha nature, whatever you want to call it, this open quality. So we're talking about that actually until you start, what Punla Rinpoche was saying in this article is until you start working with unfavorable conditions or unfavorable situations, which is to say situations you don't like, until you start working with them, or when, he said, actually, when you start working with them, this is when you really begin to have the quality of being on a path of awakening. And to the degree that you're always just trying to use your meditation to run away, and you're so happy when it's still and peaceful and things are going well, and then you feel that something's gone wrong when there's any kind of anxiety or loneliness or anger or anything like that. He said, until you begin to really relate with the unfavorable or the unpleasant things, as part of your meditation. They're not the whole thing, but until you start working with them, until then you don't really have the quality of being on a path of awakening. And when you start working with them, then it begins to permeate your whole life more. Your meditation is no longer motivated by trying to escape certain things in your life. Do you see? This is very, very important, because otherwise, consciously or unconsciously, we use meditation to try to escape from just experiencing certain qualities of emotion, because they're so loaded for us. So Achan Amaro, who is an American, or British actually, Dharma teacher, he said, "That which is threatening to ego is liberating to the heart." So we do this practice because it's actually, we're doing this kind of practice of experiencing is definitely threatening to the ego. In fact, it is completely unwinding, dissolving, seeing through. They say there is no ego, really, but it feels as solid as our fixations. And when our fixated quality begins to be seen through, then there's the liberation of this ego clinging. So he said, that which is threatening to the ego is liberating to the heart. So I wanted to just say one more thing about view. So far I've been trying to just point out the importance of experiencing emotions as part of our path. And this is something we do in meditation, but definitely this is something we do throughout the day, because the things tend to come up mostly in what we call post-meditation. And so this isn't just something we work with on the cushion. Maybe you sit down, and every time you sit down, everything is smooth and nothing comes up. But then as soon as you have to have work period and you have to work with someone you don't like or have a phone call you don't want to make or whatever it is, then up it comes. I doubt that anyone of us in this room has any days that are completely free of emotions, disturbing emotions. Maybe occasionally, you know. But I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm saying that actually that becomes your path and you will find the natural state, you will find the open quality of Buddha nature right within those emotions. This is the important point. So by experiencing, you're going deeper into the natural state. Because by willing to experience emotion, that's the same thing as saying uncovering or dissolving the fixation of ego. Because ego doesn't like experiencing. It likes running. So I wanted to point out this. When a strong emotion arises, I'll say this and then you can notice if you find it to be true in your experience. When a strong emotion arises, it distracts our attention. So let's just say we're practicing attention, we're practicing being present, just being in a relaxed, open way, just relaxing into the present moment. We're practicing, training in being present. So we're training in a gentle, open attention to everything that's happening in our minds, visually, with our ears, everything. Just this open attention, friendly, open attention. But when a strong emotion arises, the usual pattern is it distracts us. And so suppose we're meditating. It distracts our attention away from the breath and we get completely caught in it and we're off and running because it's all mixed up with thoughts. We're not experiencing the energy. We're actually, it's completely wedded with the thoughts. What we call emotion. Well, Trungpa Rinpoche says that emotion, actually the definition of emotion, is energy mixed with thoughts. And if you can let the thoughts go or interrupt the conversation, then you have just the energy. But the interesting thing, the strong emotion distracts our attention away from the breath, but interestingly enough, it doesn't distract our attention into the emotion. You would think it would distract you from the breath into the emotion, but in fact what it does is it distracts you away from the experience. That's what happens. The strong emotion arises, and then what we do next with our mind or with our words or with our actions distracts us away from the energy. So what I mean by this is the strong emotion arises and almost simultaneously we move away from it with some kind of strategy. which is to say we either go to war, you know, there's some kind of aggressive thing that happens, like aggressive storyline about they or me or something, destroy, blame, revenge, aggression, plotting it all out, you know, or the strong emotion arises and we go into a strategy of seeking comfort. And we have a lot of different ways to do that, but there's something, strong emotion arises, and the next thing we know, we're seeking comfort. We're planning. My thing with this woman was that just trying to figure out how to get her to like me again or even talk to me, and I was obsessing, you know, all the time about how to make this work out so I wouldn't have to keep feeling this thing. So we get distracted into a strategy of, like, seeking comfort in some way. Pleasure-seeking or, you know, in our own style, our own strategy of seeking security or comfort or resolution to this difficulty. Or going back in meditation, it might be just getting distracted into good memories, pleasant memories, or planning something pleasant in the future. But somehow, maybe that's our strategy. Another way we seek comfort is to build ourselves up, which is to say we just get off on someone maybe insulted us, and then there's the strong emotion, and then we kind of build ourselves up that how good we are and how we're going to set them straight and how we're so right and we're so... We build ourselves up. But in any case, all of these strategies are moving away from the actual rawness or realness or immediacy of the actual experience. Control is another one, you know. We have our methods, our strategies of just trying to control the situation to get it to work out okay. And, you know, and then there's a lot of other emotions that are actually distractions too. Like there's the initial discomfort that we're actually afraid of, and then maybe we get teary, maybe we get horny, maybe we get paranoid. Maybe we get jealous or enraged, or fear is a really common one. But do you see what I'm saying? It gets really complicated what our strategies are to move away. But generally speaking, that's what happens. Strong emotion comes up and we distract ourselves from actually experiencing it. So you have to test this with your own experience. And this is sounding somewhat conceptual, but really, the basic point I'm making is that it distracts our attention, but not to the experience. It distracts it away from the experience. So that's the basic premise here. So the problem is that when there's strong emotion, we usually become less present. We kind of lose touch. It sweeps us away into some kind of usually thinking about it, but also it can get very complicated with we have to talk to people, we have to solve this, or if we have to build something or keep busy or go to our room and cry or something, you know. And with illness is an interesting one, because I've had a lot of illness. Illness is not necessarily a strategy, but if you've been ill a lot, you begin to use it as a strategy. So the strong emotion comes up and then you somehow collapse into your weakness or something. And it could be valid that somehow, but on the other hand, you kind of can use it too. So in other words, you lose touch. That's really the problem. And so the meditation is to experience. In other words, notice that you're moving away. And so there might be in this process a lot of having to kind of really see through your strategies, notice what you start saying to yourself, what happens next, you know, in terms of the kind of stories you tell yourself. It can be everything from your mind becomes very critical or your mind becomes very self-judgmental, or that you really get at some of your core fears and you say, you know, like sometimes if I've been doing this meditation with people one-on-one, we'll do it for a while and then I'll say, and so what are you saying to yourself? And I'll say, what's the words that would go with this? And the words might often be, I never get it right, or I can't do this, or this is too hard. Either you blame yourself or you blame the other thing. This technique is stupid, or this is a waste of my time. Or so, but there's some kind of like negative thinking that goes along, often directed at yourself. like I'm not okay kind of thoughts, some kind of... But that is something that you might see more and more clearly as you do this, but the main purpose is to actually get at the underlying experience of the emotion. So the question is how to sit with attention to the experience, how to actually have a non-conceptual experience, how to feel the energy of it, or what I usually say is abide with the experience without believing in the stories about it or the opinions about it. So the key instruction, we're going to be working with different exercises, but the basic instruction for you to remember, whether in meditation or in post-meditation, is when strong emotion arises, go to your body and just start breathing in and out and try to simultaneously hold the experience, or hold the experience maybe is not the best word because it sounds like you're trying to, you know, like pin it down or something, but simultaneously experience what's happening emotionally. And what we're talking about here really is the Shenpa experience of getting hooked. And I'll tell you, as people who wish to attain enlightenment, if we don't work with this, there's no hope for us. Because I've seen people meditating for years and years and years as they've experienced the nature of their mind, they've experienced stillness and calmness and things, but as soon as a relationship goes bad, or they get fired from a job, or they get negative feedback, or they find out they have a serious illness, or someone they love has a serious illness, they just collapse. And it's just like they never meditated a day in their life, and this emotion completely takes them away. There's something so strong coming up, they don't want to go there, and they go on automatic pilot, and it turns into a big scenario of either self-denigration or criticizing the outside, and it becomes a major fixation. And it's just like, and there's no path quality in it all. There's path quality until you hit the tough points, and then you're just more samsaric than the average person. It's like this stuff, like that person who really just insulted me, has nothing to do with awakening. You know, they're really bad, and we're going to make sure we get rid of them. And we want everybody to get together and agree on how bad they are. And, you know, it gets like that, you know, either in your fantasies or actually in reality. And I've seen it happen so much with very senior practitioners that I just implore you to really work with this, because this is so important. Don't think it isn't. It's important. You actually can't do Vajrayana practice unless you're practicing this way. And in fact, you can't do Mahayana practice either, because with Mahayana, without practicing this way, you have no compassion for other people. And also you have no appreciation for what you can learn from your emotions. So the basic instruction is when the strong feeling comes up, and it will be accompanied by a strong habitual pattern. These are the ones I'm talking about where you automatically start to go into your justification or whatever it is. That's where we really get stopped in our tracks in terms of our path of enlightenment. But it is the very place where we actually could make enormous progress on the path if we're willing to take that as path. So the basic instruction is that when it arises, go to the body and breathe in and out and also experience at the same time. And so this is to say, if you just go to the breath, people sometimes use that as a way of repressing the emotion. You know, there's like anger comes up and then you just go to breathing as a way to sort of chill it out. That's not really what I'm talking about, because that could be something you need to do, maybe to calm down, but you also want to really experience the underlying energy of anger till it no longer has this power over you. And chilling it out helps a little bit, but it's still there to just pop out the next time the causes and conditions arise. It's just there, just as strong, and you're just as afraid of it as ever, maybe even more afraid. Because every time you repress it, you're becoming more afraid of it. It's becoming more of a opponent, you know. And it's bigger than you, you know. So we're trying to experience. So breathing is a way of staying present. It sort of anchors you. Because if you just go to the felt experience without the breath, my experience has been, and the experience of other meditators, is that you can drown in it then. You know, it's just like so filled with conditioning and so kind of threatening that you just sort of like feel like you can't get any breath. You definitely connect with the experience and then you feel like you're drowning and you can't. You know what I'm saying? It's like overwhelm, I guess was what I'm talking about. So breathing with it really helps. But that's the point though, to breathe with it, not to breathe it away. Do you see? And if it does dissipate, fine. I mean, that's what just happened. Let it be like that. But the point is to experience, to go to our experience rather than go to our strategies or our conceptual ways of exiting. Now, some people use Tonglen, and that's really how I first found my ability to do this, because of the fact that you're breathing it in. The metaphor of that or the image of that was extremely helpful to actually get the feeling of not running away from it. So it doesn't have to really be Tonglen. You could just have the feeling that as you're breathing it in so that you're kind of being it. You are it, actually. You don't have to divide yourself in two, but you could have the image of breathing it in to the heart. It helps. Helps the idea of breathing it into the heart, the large heart, if that helps you. So you don't have to actually call that Tonglen. It sort of becomes Tonglen when then you take the next step and you breathe in for all the other people who are feeling exactly what you are. So this becomes the basis for Tonglen, the basis for empathy, for being able to stand in someone else's shoes. You're feeling, say, it's anger or fear or jealousy or poverty. And then as you breathe in, there could be the recognition that billions and zillions of people feel this right in this moment and have in the past and will in the future, that you're touching into a universal experience. For you, it has a particular storyline, but it's a universal experience. Does that make sense to you? That fear, anger, jealousy are universal experiences. All emotions are universal experiences when actually tasted and so this is the general instruction, is to breathe with it and notice that your mind keeps wanting to go away from it and just keep coming back. The difficulty is that we're going to do this as an exercise and it very likely will feel contrived because I'm going to say try to bring up a reactive emotion or a reactive pattern by a memory or something. If something has been happening all morning, that's already been what's been happening, that's good news because then you really have something to work with. Instead of labeling it thinking, well, you are in a way going to be working with the thinking labeling, but you know, you realize it's a very fruitful thing to work with. But if you've just been having a very, you know, calm morning and so forth, and you know, if you think this is a wonderful period in my life, nothing's really going wrong, well, unfortunately, then you're not going to have much to work with in this exercise. But nevertheless, if nothing comes up, that's just what's happening. So then just try to experience whatever is going on, like pleasantness or disappointment that you can't think of something. Or you know, there'll be some thoughts, and really just try to experience the quality underneath the thoughts, whatever they are. Particularly these fantasy thoughts that really take you away, they definitely have an energy. Definitely. So first thing I'm going to say is to just try to bring up something. And as I say, that's either going to be quick and easy because maybe you have a constant memory of a trauma or something that right away, you know, something comes up. And if it isn't easy, then just really try to experience whatever you're feeling. Experience drowsiness. often when we start working with emotions, a lot of people get really drowsy because they don't want to do this. But then you can just experience the drowsiness or experience the, I don't know, just experience. This is a try to experience whatever is happening. But what we're moving toward is a way to include emotional distress as your path of awakening. And so I guarantee you that later today, or at least tomorrow or the next day, you'll have something, a chance to really practice this with something more charged. So, sit down. It might be interesting for you to know something that comes from Ken MacLeod. He says, in order to experience, there's two exits that you're not taking, and one is acting out, speaking, acting, doing something, and the other is repressing. So this is a standard meditation instruction that, in terms of your whole life, is to not act out or repress, but to see what happens if you don't do either of those things. So he says, when you act out, then that this energy goes into the action. In other words, you deflect it, or whatever you want to say, from the actual uncomfortable experience, and the energy goes into the action, and then that brings some sense of relief. And if you repress what happens, and we know this, then the energy that you're trying to move away with gets actually locked in your body and manifests as physical pain and illness. So the energy either goes into the body and gets caught, or it goes into the activity. So we're trying to train ourselves gradually over time, patiently, and with sense of humor and gentleness, train ourselves to experience the energy without needing to put it into action or to repress it so that it gets stuck in the body.